tired of them. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. Folks, it's a real topsy-turvy week. We must be living in that. Hey, Jeff, we're probably living in that universe where things go in reverse. You read about that universe this week where things go in reverse?
Oh, the one we discovered that we definitely discovered and is totally real?
Definitely discovered that. That's definitely not a bunch of reporters for a bunch of vlogs that do not want to pay for a new scientist subscription and so only read the first three paragraphs of that story. That's definitely not what happened. There is a backwards universe and we are probably living in it because normally, Jeff, I'm trying to bring more science to this show and you're trying to bring Chronicles of a Badass.
And the fan favorite segment of the We Have Concerns award-winning science program, Chronicles of a Badass. Is that what you're referring to?
I'm referring to your miscarriage of a segment. Chronicles of a Badass, which has never once worked out for you.
But it's always so close.
It's so close. It's when you drill down a little bit, it falls apart. But if you just look at it from a bird's eye view and squint, a lot of these Chronicles of a Badass could potentially be about badasses. But here's what happened, Jeff. I think I found a badass and I'd like to talk about it.
The first Anthony Carboni proposed Chronicles of a Badass segment here on the award-winning We Have Concerns Science podcast?
Here on the award-winning Badass Chronicling podcast.
I am so excited for this. I'm sure this is going to be a home run in the way that all of my segments could never have been.
Well, I saw this and I was just like, fuck, Jeff wins. Jeff wins because this is a real badass, and I want to talk about this because this is something that can only be done with careful planning at a specific point in time with the conditions all being right and somebody seizing those conditions. And I think that's a real Chronicles of a Badass.
Yes, indeed.
I want to talk about something called the Cannonball Run.
I love those movies.
It's
the Dom DeLuise.
It's because you're a dad.
And the Burt Reynolds.
It's because every out of touch dad really loves Cannonball Run.
Every out of touch dad loves the entire DeLuise oeuvre.
Oh man, right? If you can get a Reynolds and a DeLuise in one place, dads so happy. There's never been a happier dad than when a DeLuise and a fucking Reynolds are in the same place at the same time.
When I had my first child. Mm-hmm. I came home from the hospital and I discovered a DeLuise box set of DVDs. Oh, I didn't even know I had it. I don't even think I did have it.
They don't let you take your kid home from the hospital unless you have a car seat, a stroller, and a box set of Cannonball Run. That's it. They're like, no, we can't let you leave the hospital without that stuff. That's basic parenting. But the Cannonball Run, it turns out, like, to me, it's just part of that kind of like weird 70s, 80s, genre of film that's just about a bunch of people that have to race for some reason, you know?
Yeah, the idea of those movies, I think, is just like cast a bunch of likable folks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what they're doing. We just roll film.
You pair a couple people up that people think are funny together. They don't have to interact with the other groups of people, right? The shooting exactly. The shooting schedule is very easy for everyone. You get some famous people that are like pretty fun, and you have them go on this race. There was the Cannonball Run. It's a mad, 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 mad world. There's Daddy's dying. Who's got the will? It's a bunch of like movies just about people that got to get from one place to another, and hilarious antics ensue. But it turns out the Cannonball Run is a real fucking thing.
The Cannonball Run was a documentary series, is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is Dom DeLuise and Burt Reynolds actually did the Cannonball Run. Who else was in those movies? Were the Smothers Brothers there? Who the fuck was there?
You know who's in Cannonball Run is Jackie Chan. I think it's like his first American movie.
That's right. Jackie Chan is in Cannonball Run. Welcome to our science podcast.
And Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin are in it?
Yes, that's right. They race together.
It's the weirdest, and Jamie Farr from MASH, and
God.
And Roger Moore is in it for some reason.
Hell yeah.
It's like, I don't know who's in it.
I don't, wow.
I'm young and hip. I don't know, Anthony. I don't know who's in it.
Real dad hours over here. I love it. But the Cannonball Run is a real thing, and the Cannonball Run is a record that is set for driving cross country. But you have to drive the width of the United States. You have to start at a place called the Red Ball Garage in Manhattan, in New York.
Right.
And you
have the center of the East Coast, they call it.
Yep. That's where it is. The Red Ball Garage, which is built on a ley line. It's built on a ley line. And so all of the spiritual and psychic energy of speed and power starts at the Red Ball Garage in Manhattan. And then that ley line.
Do people do this? People just show up at the Red Ball Garage and be like, hey, I'm going to try this. Or is it like an organized, is it like a yearly event? What is this cannonball run?
So I'll let you know. You got to end, by the way, at the Portofino Inn in Redondo Beach, California. Not 30 minutes from me. Right.
Hey,
right.
Look at that.
Right now. Usually it's an hour and a half from me.
Right.
But that's what I'm getting at is, so number one, this is not like a thing that gets done every year. This is not particularly organized because it's fucking illegal. Do you know how many roads you would have to shut down to get a legal cannonball run going in the United States? This is a cross-country event. You'd have to shut down entire swaths of interstate.
That's why Smokey is always on their tail.
That's right.
That's why they're always dealing with the Smokey.
They call him the bandit.
Always after him.
They call him the bandit. They don't call him the guy who filled out his permits.
That's right. They're always worried about the guy who doesn't understand that cop with the sunglasses who always comes trying to get him, but doesn't realize that you can use that truck as a jump ramp.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly it.
The Smokey doesn't ever understand how to use the jump ramp.
Listen.
There's one thing that they don't teach you in Smokey school.
Burt Reynolds walked so Vin Diesel could run. That's what I'm saying today.
That is some truth, some hard truth.
That is some hard truth, okay?
They would neither be fast nor furious if it wasn't for Bert and Dom.
They might be furious because in the first movie, there was a lot of stuff about like race and economic background, you know, so they might still be furious, but they did ditch that in the later movies to be specifically about, you know, driving down the side of a building.
And family, man. Hashtag family.
It is mostly about hashtag family. So the Cannonball Run record, I mean, if you think about this, the previous Cannonball Run record was something like 28 hours. So think about this. You've got to start in New York.
Across the country in 28 hours? That's insane.
You've got to get across the country.
That's crazy.
And just to like, just for people who listen from outside of the United States, I'm just going to let you know that the width of the United States, okay, New York to Los Angeles is about 4,000 kilometers. All right, it's about 48 miles. It's about 4,000 kilometers. Okay, just so everybody now understands what we're talking about. We're talking about going almost 2,500 miles in 28 hours.
So that's almost 100 miles an hour.
Almost
average.
Average. And that's without getting stopped by the cops. That's you got to stop to refill your gas tank. And remember, you're burning rubber, man. So you got to refill your gas tank a lot. Think about that. 28 hours. As a dad,
and all the hijinks. Just the time, factoring on all the hijinks times.
I know. Sometimes somebody paints a tunnel on the side of a place or like switches a road sign on you.
Yeah.
Or like
toads in the road.
Or like Dean got drunk and he's holding the map upside down. I don't know how Cannonball Run works.
Oh, man. Wacky hijinks.
I don't think I've actually ever seen it. But as a dad, I have to imagine the thought of getting all the way across country, the ultimate road trip in 28 hours. You must have had an orgasm.
I mean, I don't need to be that explicit about it, but
kind of, right? That's good time. They're making good time.
They're making real good time. You're going to tell me, I'm predicting that you're going to tell me that because of the global pandemic, the roads are roads are clearer. And so people are trying the Cannonball Run right now.
Baby, here's what's up.
Oh my God.
Where everybody else sees sadness, these Cannonball Runners see opper fucking tunity, my dude.
Oh my God.
They say, get out the cars, even though it's about family, because it's about to Cannonball Run right now.
Holy shit. It's kind of brilliant to just go, there will never be a time where the Cannonball Run is more doable than right now.
Dude, literally, conditions are so perfect for the Cannonball Run.
Oh my God. And so people are trying this, or somebody did?
A lot of people are trying this to the point where the record has been broken twice in 5 weeks.
Unbelievable.
Now there is a Cannonball Run community. They refuse to be identified. They don't want anybody to know who they are, obviously, right? Because they'll get harassed by cops. They're doing illegal things.
Right.
So nobody really gets to know who they are. They let some,
they all have mustaches.
Mm-hmm. They wear white suits.
They all hang out with stuntmen.
I picture like they're a so lot of cool. white suits in Cannonball Run. Were there a lot of white suits?
Yeah, yeah. I think there was like a white suit with like the it's like the Evil Knievel suit, right? That's what they all wore.
Was Evil Knievel in the Cannonball Run? Was Joan Rivers there? Somebody had to.
I bet Joan Rivers had to be
there. Joan Rivers had to have been there. Anyway, this is neither here nor there. We're talking about the real heroes, Dom DeLuise and Burt Reynolds. No, we're talking about the real heroes. Right. So here's what's up. This is an underground community of people, because if you think about this, you have to have, your car has to be probably, it's not going to be street legal. This is going to be a heavily modified vehicle. Okay? Yeah. You're basically trying to build a racing car that looks street legal so you don't get pulled over as much.
Dude, the levels of strategy.
Right?
You don't want to hot rod so hard that you're going to get smoky on your tail.
Dude, the bandit knows better than that, I would imagine. Once again, I don't think I've ever seen Smokey and the Bandit. But
I know that we're in the age of cell phones now for this, but I really want to believe they're still using CBs. You know what I'm saying?
Oh God, yeah. And if like if a cop turns into the right channel on the CB, they can hear them all, and they got to be like,
yeah, you can hear the whole community,
and they got to like
of Cannonball Runners.
They got to like figure out how to like code to change channels into what channel to change to. Oh man,
breaker 19. I got Smokey on your 6. You know that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That kind of action.
Well, there are spotters. That's the other thing that happens. There are official spotting teams. So like you're driving in your car, but you have maybe like 30 spotters across the country that are like they're checking for you, they're checking for cops, they're checking for construction, they're letting you know what happened. It's like rally racing.
They're worried about that little old lady moving her cart across the street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, wait, watch out, Smokey, or whoever you are in this. Was Smokey in the Cannonball Run? Burt Reynolds was, but was he the bandit? I don't.
No, he's not the bandit in the Cannonball Run. That's a different film franchise, okay. But it's okay.
Okay.
We're conflating.
Yeah, I feel like it's all Smokey bandit-ish, right?
Yeah, he's still got the essence of bandit.
Yeah.
He'll never shake that in my book.
My dad used to wear essence of bandit, and now anytime I smell it, it makes me feel like I'm at home. But I feel like every dad used to wear essence of bandit in the 80s. So you have 30 spotters. You have a heavily modified car. This latest car that set a record was done with an Audi A8, okay, that was heavily modified and had large marine fuel tanks strapped into the trunk of the car.
So they don't have to stop.
They can constantly feed fuel into the car. Giant tanks.
Brilliant.
Ooh.
More time for hijinks.
There's so many more hijinks. You can put like an oil slick on the road.
Whoa.
You know? Yeah. Or like a truck full of chickens, and you can release the chickens, and then the feathers block the windshield.
Oh, that's the worst thing for Smokey. He hates that.
Hates it. But so, what do you think this new plague era fucking record is?
Okay, so the previous one was 28 hours?
28, and people have just been going back and forth for the last 5 weeks because they can.
That's wild. Okay, I can't believe that it would be shattered to such a degree that it was like dramatically, I would say, maybe an hour shaved off the time. I feel like an hour shaved off is a massive amount, right? It can't be less than 27. That's a huge amount of time to shave off a record.
Buddy, in the last 5 weeks, it was first broken to 26 hours and 38 minutes. And now it's been broken to just under 26 hours.
Holy shit.
Just under 26 hours. Okay. Accommodating.
That's wild.
Yeah. So they are talking about at least an average of 173 kilometers an hour, which is about 107 or 102, I think 102 miles an hour average speed.
You're driving over 100 miles an hour for 26 hours straight.
Yep. But you're still stopping.
Bonkers.
You're still stopping for fuel and stuff like that. So that means that the new record holders are going just a hair under 200 kilometers an hour. Okay, so that is they are going 193 kilometers an hour, which is 120 miles an hour average speed.
Oh my God!
Can you imagine doing that all the way across the United States?
I kind of want to be one of the spotters. How does somebody apply for a spotter position?
I don't know.
Because, you know, I feel like that's a fun job. You're just hanging out, you know, and then you're like, you're done for the day, you know? But you were part of it. You were part of history. I think that's cool. But that is an insane achievement. And it also speaks profoundly to the difference across the country in traffic right now, you know? Because I'm imagining they get on a freeway. I would guess the vast majority of this is freeway driving.
Yeah.
And, you know, the freeways are not empty. So you're still seeing some dude go 120 past you. But the ability to be able to do that over the entire length of the country.
Yeah.
That's a crazy amount of difference between what they were able to do. I wonder do you have a date of when the original or the earlier record had been set? Was it recently or was it like in the 70s?
Again, it was set by Burt Reynolds.
What?
Yeah, it was set by Burt Reynolds.
You know, that tracks.
No.
That tracks.
The Cannonball Run records. Let me see if I can pull up. So the last official record. This is crazy. So the full title of it is the Cannonball Baker Sea to Shining Sea Memorial Trophy Dash. Also called the Cannonball Run.
Yeah, let's stick with the run.
It started in May 3rd, 1971. Okay.
Wow.
The cross country run was created by an auto racer named Brock Yates. Brock Yates.
Yeah, of course it was Brock Yates.
Of course Brock Yates.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he's living that Brock life, baby. That's where the name comes from.
Brock Yates.
Brock Yates, born 1933, died 2016. He was a journalist, author, and fucking car racer and writer. He wrote
Brock.
And
living that Brock life.
Living that Brock
life. This is not just Chronicles of a Badass. This is a Brock story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a science story. It's everything.
It's everything, baby. It's everything. I may have just cracked the code for this show.
Well, it looks like we have to stop doing the show again.
Bye, everyone. So Brock and fellow car and driver editor Steve Smith made the first run. It wasn't a competitive race then. There was only one team. They just wanted to see how far they can do it. They did it as a celebration of the brand new United States Interstate Highway System.
Aww.
Right?
It was it was just an honor of roads.
It was an honor, you know, of roads. Remember that, like,
just wanted to burn some fuel for no reason. Let's do it.
Remember that, like, in the 60s, like, the idea of, like, oh, we can drive cross country easily now was such a huge thing.
You're saying remember the 60s? Like, this is not funny. I was not alive in the 60s.
Are
man.
You sure you weren't alive in the 60s?
I'm very positive.
Are you,
that.
Think back. Are you sure? Were you not alive in the 60s, or is this like a boomer joke where I don't remember the 60s, man? You know what I mean?
No.
Because of Woodstock, because of Puff Puff Pass, or whatever the fuck it was, Dad? Are you sure?
Yeah. I'm very sure, Anthony. Thank you.
So, Brock Yates, his son. An heir to his fortune, Brock Yates Jr. Brock
of
Yates.
Of course he's named his kid Brock.
The second. Brocker than Brock.
Of course. More Brock than Brock. He's got the Brock in the blood is what he's got.
They did, in 1971, in May 3rd, they got in a Dodge Custom Sportsman van called Moon Trash 2.
Hell yeah.
And drove across country in 35 hours and 54 minutes.
In a van. It's nuts.
Yeah. It's crazy, right? It's crazy.
Moon Trash 2.
Moon
I love it.
Trash 2. So we're talking about 35 hours set, and that was like 75 is when the 35 hour record was set. So, like, you gotta remember the interstates were not as driven then, and were not as well policed back then. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So times have not, it's been hard to get a faster and faster time as number one, infrastructure, traffic cameras, all of this stuff. And plus just added traffic on interstates. Everybody uses an interstate now, like in practically their day-to-day driving. If you're going to work, you hop on the, sure. you hop on the interstate, right?
Yeah.
The record up until just a couple years ago was 32 hours and 51 minutes. That was set by Dave Hines and Dave Yarborough, the two Daves, they called him.
Couple of Daves.
Double Daves, they called them. And that was in 1979. The Double Daves set that record, and it stood for a very, very, very long time. Until Ed Bolian, who is, you're going to love this guy. He started an exotic car company as a college student, and went on to become the director of sales at Lamborghini Atlanta. Okay. Then he started a VinWiki app, which is like a car wiki app for people who want to customize cars.
Oh yeah, your vehicle ID number. Yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
He now has this thing called Premier Financial Services. He's a finance guy, and he owns like luxury cars, and he's like the winningest Cannonball Run dude. He's sort of like the dude now that has the record. Up until this year, he had the record, and now he's sort of the official. The official standard bearer. There is no official
league. He's Burt Reynolds.
He's the Reynolds.
Just say it. He's Burt Reynolds.
He's the Reynolds, okay? He's the Reynolds, and the deal is when you report a record on the Cannonball Run, you report it to Ed. Ed's the guy who will talk to the press about the Cannonball Run, okay? So, like, in this article, because he's rich.
He's like the Twin Galaxies guy.
Yeah, no one can touch this guy. He's a millionaire, yeah. And he doesn't do it anymore, and he doesn't know who's doing it anymore, but he'll tell you who the record holder is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. He knows nothing, but he knows it all.
He knows it all. So, like, if you're going to do a run, you usually check in with Ed. If you're going to if you break a record, you check in with Ed. Ed's got to know that it's happening.
Ed has not bought his own drink in any bar in 30 years.
That's how he became a millionaire. You'd think it's because of his financial services, but when you're the Cannonball Run, when you're like the real life bandit and you walk into a bar, I feel like dads just know. You probably feel it. You know what I mean?
You sense it. You either sense it or you notice his white jumpsuit with the stars on the sleeves. You know, it's one of those two. Either you sense it or you see him coming a mile away because he's dressed like that with the big
wide
collar.
With the big t-shirt that says, ask me about the Cannonball Run. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like the dad. Yeah. It's like the dad who in his midlife crisis gets a Corvette and then like wears the Corvette leather jacket and like the Corvette gloves the Corvette and the hat. Yeah. He's like a Corvette guy now. He's waited his whole life and now he's a Corvette guy. And he walks into a bar and everybody's like, oh, so you have a Corvette, huh? And he's like, oh, yeah. Funny you should ask.
Yeah, no. How did you notice?
How did you know that? Opens up his like Corvette laptop. You know those laptops they make for dads that they fucking sell like only in like Sky Mall.
It's got that leather Corvette wallet with the Corvette insignia right on the wallet.
How sad is it for the dads that have all that stuff but not the Corvette though? You know what I mean? Because you know that
they just bought all the. They just bought all the stuff.
There's like an there's like an NBC.
They go out the outside and get in their Ford Taurus and drive away.
Yeah, there's an NBC like family drama. This Is Us kind of working class dad out there whose family always gets him Corvette stuff. You know what I mean? Because he loves
aspirational.
Yeah, because he loves
it's all aspirational Corvette stuff.
But he knows he's never gonna have a Corvette, and it's like
his desk at work has the little scale model of the Corvette on it.
He's got the Corvette mouse, where you click on the hood. Yeah. You know that guy. You know that guy.
Yeah, he's got a sign behind his workstation that just says someday.
And it's written in the shape of a Corvette. The letters.
Yeah.
Oh, poor guy. He's real. Jeff, he's real, and he might be listening, and we're sorry.
Sorry, man.
Hey, man, we're sorry.
Someday you'll get that Corvette.
Someday you'll get that Corvette.
And you'll do that Cannonball Run.
We've all got
25 hours.
We've all got our white whale. You know what I'm saying? We've all got our white whale.
Do you think that 24 hours is like the 4-minute mile for Cannonball runners?
Oh, for sure. Now that...
You know, it's like this... That if you can do it inside of one day, you know?
Now that 26 has been broken... And it's like, just fill the car with fuel tanks, which like, by the way, that's fucking dangerous. Can we like talk about how that's fucking dangerous?
This illegal thing through, you know, a civilian infused roads and you're literally a cannonball plummeting down the road that could explode in a fiery ball of death.
The flip side of the story is there's a highway patrolman who gets to catch one of these guys, and that's a big day for him, too.
Oh, yeah. You're like lead Smokey when you do that.
Can't...
All the other Smokies are like, this is the best Smokey.
Listen, nobody's saying Smokey's the good guy, but there is a story to be told from Smokey's perspective. You know what I mean?
Sure.
This dude's driving down the interstate, bullying around with like at like 130 miles an hour, literally with fuel strapped to every part of the car. This dude crashes.
Smokey,
It's dangerous for everyone.
That would be a terrible, terrible tragedy. Yeah. Meanwhile, Smokey has went to police academy and learned his trade, going into the office every day, looking at his scale model of a Corvette, hoping that someday...
These sons of bitches, if I had a Corvette, I wouldn't treat it that way. I've been working hard all my life. I'm a good cop. I'm a good dad. If I had a Corvette... Let me tell you something I'd do with a Corvette. Number one, I'd only keep groceries in the trunk. Number two, I'd drive the speed limit. Does that sound like a bad way to own a Corvette? Fuck you. It's not your dream. It's mine.
All right.
Maybe I just respect the aesthetics of the car. Maybe I respect the engineering, and I don't need to show off by going over 70 miles an hour.
Are you going to put me in the cell now, or...
Yeah, Bolian, I'm going to put you in the cell. I'm going to put you right in the cell. And then when you get out of the cell in 4 hours, because you're a millionaire and you're going to be able to pay your bond, I'm going to buy you a beer. And you're going to tell me what it's like to own a Corvette. And we're still enemies. Got it?
Oh, it's like a heat.
It's like a heat situation, Jeff. It's like a Paul Walker, Vin Diesel situation, Jeff.
Ah, oh, it's so good.
It's so good. I love the Cannonball Run. Listen, if anybody out there is even tangentially related to the Cannonball Run, whether it's the 70s,
let us be spotters.
Just let me see a little bit of this Cannonball Run. I don't know a goddamn.
We just want us to be spotters.
I'm
so good at spotting shit.
Listen, dude.
Oh man.
I play the Where's Waldo I Spy shit all the time. I got all those books. I don't have a kid. Fuck you. I own them because I want to. Once again, it's not your
Honing
dream.
Your skills.
It's not your dream.
Honing your skills.
It's mine. I don't need a kid to own Where's Waldo. I just enjoy the quality of the books. I'm going to look. Listen, I would be a bad spotter because I think spotters also kind of have to drive. You probably have to run interference. You probably have to distract cops sometimes.
You get arrested in their stead?
I think spotters have to do the most of the hijinks, Jeff.
You have a car that looks exactly like the Cannonball Run car, and then you both go into a tunnel and you come out the one side and Smokey thinks it's you and Smokey's helicopter thinks it's you, and so they arrest you and you're like, I don't understand. There's no extra gas tanks in my car. It's just a normal
looking...
They pull
off your mustache and they're like, this isn't the bandit. Wait, that Rolex is fake. That's not Ed Bolian.
You're like, I don't know. You just take me in if you must.
Listen, I don't want to be a spotter. I don't want to be a racer. I probably don't want to be sitting shotgun in one of these cars. It would probably terrify me. But if I could see, if I could just see some, I don't know what I'm talking about. Now that the roads are empty, I've been going 95 in my fucking Death Yaris. I'm in like a little gray roller skate of a car, just going 95 everywhere like an insane person. That's like the slowest I drive now. But 120 is dangerous, kids. I just want to see a little bit of it. If you're out there and you're related to it in any way, just let me see a little bit of the Cannonball Run. Let me get a taste.
I want to Google this. I bet there's some YouTubes of some Cannonball Running, right? Maybe they all have masks or something, or somebody just caught sight of a Cannonball Runner going.
Oh.
There's got to be some.
Do you think they have theme masks?
Out there.
I would love to be part of a Cannonball Run team that's like black suits, domino masks, you know?
Yeah,
where you look like Kato from Green Hornet or the Crazy 88 or something like that. You know, like the gang in the matching suits with the domino mask, and like that's
so cool.
Man. But that's dumb though, because like you're gonna get pulled over and people are gonna be like, you're definitely Cannonball Running.
Yeah. Like that look, or like all of the Golden Girls. What if you're like all of the Golden
Shit,
Girls?
A bunch of Blanches and Sophias, fucking tearing ass over across the country. Fuck yeah, dude. Your spotters, like you get your spotters Rose, and you get Rose gets pulled over on purpose and tells long stupid stories to distract the cops.
It's a plan that's fiendishly clever in its intricacies.
God, I love intricacies. Or intricacies. I love them both. I love all of them. Should I watch Cannonball Run? It's nothing like this.
No, I think it's a bunch of really bad one-liners.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't watch Cannonball
strung
Run.
Strung together by some car stunts. But
I do like Rat Race, though.
I kind of want to watch it now. Rat Race? I kind of want to watch Cannonball Run now, too, just thinking about it, because I literally haven't thunk about it. Thunk about it.
Listen, I'm not thunking.
I haven't thought
I haven't thunk about the intricacies about this in many a moon.
I do remember... I mean, we joke about dads, but I do remember my dad quoting this movie quite a lot in my youth. So
we should probably watch Cannonball Run. Hey, if y'all want to hang out in the Discord and watch Cannonball Run with us, let's set that up. Let us know in the Discord.
Oh, dude, that sounds like a fun activity. So Cannonball Run, Cannonball Run 2, and then there's something called Speed Zone. I guess it's like a
Cannonball Run,
a kind of a pseudo sequel.
Like a Gaiden. It's a side story.
Yeah.
It's like Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, where it's in the same universe, but not necessarily connected to the mainline story as much.
Exactly.
God, I love the Fast and the Furious.
And then they work it
movies.
Back in, you know? They got to work it back in. Maybe this Cannonball Run needs to be rebooted. We got to get a pitch meeting.
Jeff's going off on a tangent, but in case you were wondering what I was talking about, while I was talking about the Discord is basically, it's basically a fun place for all of the concerned citizens that watch the show to get together, talk about whatever, hang out, shoot the shit, you know, whatever it is you do. We'd love to have you there.
Yeah. Shoot all of the shit that you want there.
We don't care.
There's so much shit to shoot.
We're not your dads.
Didn't shoot any of it.
Yeah. We can't tell you what to do, but we can tell you.
We won't.
We would never. We would never tell you what to do, but
we'll ask.
We'll ask if you want to be part of the Discord. We will ask that you head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Support us for any amount of money, a dollar or more, and you get access to that Discord. Come hang out with us. We're probably going to watch Cannonball Run. I really want to do it now.
Oh, me too.
But you also get access to a bunch of different stuff too. Like, it starts with the Discord, but it does not end there.
Oh, that's just the beginning. The Discord is basically that garage on the East Coast.
That's right.
Where the Cannonball Run starts.
We're starting at the Red Ball. Okay, that's the Red Ball in Manhattan. You want to get all the way to the Portofino here in LA? Let me tell you where the Portofino is. First, you start at the Red Ball. That's the Discord. Then you drive through, I don't know, a bunch of states in the Midwest. I don't know anything about it. I don't know about the route. You'd think I would have looked into that. But along the way, maybe you stop at...
Or basic American geography.
They're all Kansas or Ohio. Listen to me. Along the way, you stop at $3. That's going to get you the cold opens to every episode. You may notice that we start at the end of a conversation every episode. That conversation is a separate secondary show that you can have for $3 a month. $3 a month. You get that every week.
Some people say it's better than the real
show. Some people are right. I'm not going to tell you which people. $5 a month, you get to do video hangouts. We hang out, we chat, we're all on camera, catching up on the last month. $10 a month, you get your episodes early. That's the Portofino, baby. You could be watching us record this live right now. I mean, not right now. The episode's already happened. You're not a time traveler. We don't live in an imaginary universe that goes backwards, but you could have listened to it.
Yeah.
You could have.
Yeah, we all have regrets. Don't let yours be... that you could have listened to us record it live. There are people listening right now, and you're not one of them, potentially. Maybe you are. I don't know.
Once again, I'm not your dad, okay? I couldn't pick you out of a lineup. I hope your dad could.
We are so good at promoting the Patreon,
Anthony. Damn, we're good.
People should hire us to promote their Patreons, because we're amazing at it.
Patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. How do you not want this after the way we described it?
Hey, Anthony, you know how over the 600 episodes plus of our show, you're always the one who's bringing up Chronicles of a Badass type stories, and I'm the one who's always trying to get us to talk about science?
No, I think...
You know how that's the
strike
pattern?
Strike that, reverse it. And by the way, was I the first successful Chronicles of a Badass?
I mean, that was... I guess, yeah. I think maybe the only... My only gripe is that there's too many badasses in your story.
Damn.
It wasn't just one.
Chronicles of badassery is really more what it was.
It really was. It was a whole loosely knit society of badasses is what that
damn.
Was. Well, I have to tell you, yet again, the pattern will continue, and I will attempt to pull our show back to talking about hard science. In fact, science that's probably beyond my depth.
Love it.
Which, you know, not the first time.
I'm ready.
Anthony, this week, you and I both fell madly, deeply in love with a video from folks over on a YouTube channel called Cracking the Cryptic.
Ooh.
Which are a couple of fellas, lovely gentlemen that do puzzles, mostly Sudoku, on YouTube. They have tons of subscribers, a very successful channel, and they have a very popular video that was making the rounds, and both you and I saw it independently. I think we both... alerted the other one to how awesome this video is. It's called The Miracle Sudoku.
Yes. Listen.
And this is it's a puzzle by Mitchell Lee that was solved by the folks on Cracking the Cryptic.
I knew that there was a Sudoku community out there, like a hardcore. There's a community for every kind of puzzle, every kind of board game. You know what I mean? I didn't understand. I understand why these things are interesting to the community. Something hooks into a specific thing in your brain, right? Like, I don't expect people to be into everything that I'm into, but when I get really into something, I get really into it. We're all like that. When I saw this Sudoku video, momentarily, this is one of those things where you see it and you're like, oh, maybe I'm into Sudoku, and I know I'm not, but it was just one of these things where it was a perfect moment in this hobby.
I mean, it's an exquisite video. It actually, I'm not even exaggerating, it moved me to tears. I just thought it was such a beautiful thing, especially in this time in our history, to watch someone celebrate the mind at work, to celebrate intelligence, to celebrate working through a problem and figuring it out. It was moving to me. I just found it. So it's 25 minutes. Both of us cannot recommend it higher. Seek it out. It's called The Miracle Sudoku.
It sounds crazy to watch a 25-minute video of a guy solving a Sudoku. It sounds crazy. It sounded crazy to me.
It will be one of the most riveting, dramatic things you will ever see, I promise
you.
But
I think what you're doing is you're about to tie the end of the video into whatever it is you're talking about.
I am, because here's what happened. When I watched that, I started forwarding it to everybody I know that I knew would appreciate something like this. Forwarded it to my dad, afforded it to groups of friends, afforded it to you. And one of the people I forwarded it to is my friend of the show, Jeff Engelstein, who is a board game designer, MIT graduate, very smart fella. And he responded. He's submitted stories for the show before. He responded to me by saying, hey, I had already seen that. Yes, I love it. But if you like that, you have to check this out. And he sent me a link to physicist Stephen Wolfram's website. Stephen Wolfram, a very prominent physicist who has done a lot of things, studied under Feynman, and has been a very prominent voice in kind of figuring out the big mysteries of the universe.
If you know his name, if it sounds familiar, it's because of Wolfram Alpha, which is like the which is like the search engine / math solving / fuzzy logic sort of website where you just put whatever in and it tries to solve it for you.
Yeah, he's done a lot of theoretical and practical investigation into computer languages and a lot of really fascinating stuff. Well, he has a website called the Wolfram Physics Project, and he published a paper, basically a blog entry that is about a formal paper, 400-page formal paper that he and his team put out. But he published this blog.
Can I just say how much I love that you sent your mathematician MIT buddy a video of a guy solving a Sudoku, and you're like, this is pretty cool. And he's like, yeah, oh yeah, that is cool, little buddy. Hey, you know what's real cool? This 440-page fucking dissertation by a physicist.
That is exactly what happened. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what happened. Like, he's like, hey, if you want to go down a rabbit hole,
your first paper airplane, and, and you show it to your dad, and your dad's like, hey, that's a pretty good paper airplane, champ. Can I show you a couple things? Let me show you a couple things, champ.
Let's look at the 747 I've got in the backyard, champ.
Let me show you a couple things that you could do with that paper airplane, buddy.
So I went down the rabbit hole of reading this, by the way, published April 14th of this year, very recent paper. This blog post is basically kind of a macro view. It's also very long, very detailed, very dense. I'm completely out of my depth here, but I want to bring it up to you because I find it so fascinating. Basically, the idea is a path forward to figuring out really what is the holy grail for science, which is this idea of life, the universe, and everything.
Unified theory.
A simple rule as elegant as E equals MC squared. Everyone has been searching for it for a century, trying to find that simple, elegant explanation of how the universe works, right. How it came to be on a very fundamental level. We've heard about string theory. There's lots of different things that have never really held up. This is not a solution, but it is a proposal for a way forward into how that solution may be reached. And Wolfram actually thinks he and his team, and by extension, anybody else, he's actually, this paper, the purpose of this paper is to welcome people to join the effort and be open source about the whole process. Okay. He thinks that they are much closer to potentially having something like this that could explain the universe than anyone has ever thought before.
So the problem with things like with string theory and unified field theory and all of these things, as people have been trying to find them over the last 100 years, is you have natural sort of observable, kind of like explainable laws of the universe, things like gravity, things like strong and weak attraction, things like that. But then you get into the weird shit. You get into the weird shit. Right. You get into the things like the theory of
quantum mechanics,
the theory of relativity, black holes, you know,
right.
You know, like things like that, where it's like, well, this doesn't follow any observable law that's anywhere else. It seems to be all these right. asterisks where it's like, well, everything in the universe works this way except for this. Well, why does that work differently? Well, we have no idea. It shouldn't.
Right. But this is how we explain that, and we got no way to reconcile all these different things. Oftentimes people use relativity and special relativity as a test mm-hmm. on ideas, because we know that so much of the observable universe holds fast to Einstein's equations. Right. So we go, okay, well, because we can observe things that all work this way, this is a good way to test how things work. So what Wolfram proposes here is that potentially the universe can be explained as a very simple computer program, as a very simple formula that is being run 10 to the power of 500 times or some mm-hmm. astronomical number, right? And that it is just an iteration of a very simple expression that is like one line of code, that because that line of code is self-reflexive and can alter itself as it permutates, that it actually can, that number of times in repetition can create infinite variety and all of the natural laws, mass, energy, gravity, all the things that we observe in the universe.
So what you're saying is this theory, basically, this is basically Stephen Wolfram saying, hey, do you know what the universe is? The universe is one of those YouTube videos where you build a little man and it keeps trying to figure out how to walk and jump over something, and it runs itself 100 million times until it can actually walk and jump over something. And if you look at it for the first 1,000 times, it kind of like, it tries to spin on its head. It tries to fucking crawl like a fish or a worm. It, like, the first 30 yeah. times it runs up against the thing it's got to jump over, it just fucking eats face the whole, like, every time. That's the universe. And so as it fixes itself, the old stuff continues to exist, but the new stuff also exists as well.
Yes. I mean, he gets into this thing of where segments can break off and have their own extensions and other things can happen. But it's a very dense paper, and I'm going to try to talk about it from a very macro bird's eye view, just to kind of throw out this idea. I really encourage anybody who's listening who has their imagination sparked by this, as mine was, to read it. It's a long read. It's very, a lot of it was way over my head, but a lot of it I grokked, and I will attempt to convey what it seemed to me. So basically the idea here,
immediately it sounds to me like less like a string theory and more like a web theory, if that makes sense.
Basically the way Wolfram lays it out is, imagine in your mind the world's largest flow chart, right? So you have this flow chart that says,
I fucking love a flowchart, dude. are we gonna mind map the universe? Let's fucking go, dog.
All right, boot up your PowerPoint and here we go. So basically the idea here is, I mean, he talks about it with numbers, and that was harder for me to understand than later on in the paper. He talks about it with a string of letters. So let's Let's start there because that's was easier for me to get than the numbers. So if you imagine a string of letters that looks like just very, very simple letters like A and BBB.
Okay.
And then you tell this is not the universe, obviously, but this is an example of how it might work, how we might, a very simplified version. So you have A and BBB. So if you say, okay, A transforms into BBB and BB transforms into A, that's the entire algorithm. That's the entire formula. Is if you have A, you change it into BBB. And if you have BB, you change it into A. Okay.
Okay. So A creates BBB. Okay.
Right.
And then you have three B's. So two B's becomes an A.
Right.
So one part of it goes off.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And then the other.
So two B's become so an A, two, but that third B still sticks with
okay,
that A.
Okay. So right now it's like the Mendel squares, the fucking genetic squares, right? Where it's like, I've got a BBB, so it can be AB or BA.
Correct.
Okay.
And then those, because you have an A in the AB, you transform that into BBB. So you go, that A turns into BBB, and then you have a fourth B. So that AB turns into BBBB, and now you've got two sets of BBs, which each turn into an A with an extra BB on the end.
We have concerns, except every time they say the word B, it speeds up. You know what I mean? The B movie, but it's, we have concerns, and every time they say the word B, it speeds up. This is kind of hard, like verbally, I think it's hard to picture, but
right.
Basically, but every permutation can build itself and connect to other permutations in different ways, but they're all made of the same building block.
Well, but I think you said something there casually that I need to flag, which is one of the really interesting things about this is that, yes, it splits off in this wonderfully exponential way where the more permutations, then the more permutations, right? But also, some of the permutations connect back to each other.
They can come back together. Yeah, okay.
Yes, because a couple of things on one side can end up being the exact same thing as a couple of things that started from the other side. And so you have these weird connections, and it turns into this lattice work of connections that all...
Not a string theory, a web theory.
Yes. If you run it enough times, you create these incredible patterns, and you really need to look at them in the article to understand, but the patterns are dramatic, and even just looking at these, what are just kind of wild flowcharts...
We're going to put a link in the notes.
Abstract.
We're going to put a link in the notes so you can see these. We don't want you to just try to be like picturing these things in your heads, but it looks really,
right.
You know... It looks really...
It almost looks like stuff from nature,
yeah.
Right? It almost... I mean, it does look like they have characteristics that are emergent. And each, you know, you do it a few thousand times or a few hundred times or 10,000 times. And each step along the way, things appear and disappear. It is what Wolfram describes as being completely unpredictable. Mm-hmm. He says, as long as I've been working in this kind of stuff, it's staggering to me how a simple equation can still have unpredictable forms as it progresses.
It looks a bit like, if you're looking at it, it kind of looks like, it almost looks like literal string art that you would see on like Pinterest or Instagram or something, where people like nail nails into a board and then connect the strings in
right.
like wild patterns, or like a Mandelbrot set. Like, have you ever had one of those things where where it draws the recursive Mandelbrot like patterns? It looks a lot like
yeah.
that, but they all make different shapes.
Yes, very. Right. And or, you know, even like meshes for a computer video game or something, you know, it looks kind of like that stuff. Now, that's just literally the most simplistic version of what he's talking about. But the things that start, the observations they can make based on these simplistic models,
yeah.
running them just a few thousand times, start to emerge as properties that you see in the universe.
So let me get this, because this is, I think, is the question that's going to be on most people's minds. I'm picturing a flowchart. I'm picturing A's and B's. I'm picturing all the ways A's and B's can connect back to each other and make other A's and B's. Now you got to tell me, Jeff, what do A and B represent?
Well, on a very fundamental level, he invents a new term for what the basic building block of the universe could be. But ultimately, they represent information and the building blocks of the universe. So if you imagine stepping through this graph, this flow chart, you can kind of break it down where each step along the way is time. Mm-hmm. Because it takes, it is an expression of time to say, hey, this started as one thing. This operation was performed upon it and it transformed into this thing. That operation was performed upon it again and it turned into this thing. So it's literally time is built in to the process. And ultimately, he concludes that it is on a certain level not reducible. You cannot look at the beginning of the equation and deduce where, you know, 400,000 steps in it will be. You literally have to step through to discover it. There's no way to reduce. So, although there are pockets of reducibility.
Okay, so let me pull you back again because you're getting really it's really conceptual.
Esoteric,
it's really conceptual, yeah. Right? You're talking yeah. about a lot of conceptual yeah. things. But what I want to pull this back to is this is basically saying because these are building blocks of the universe, but they're not building blocks of the universe the way we are used to thinking of them. These are not particles. These are right. not this is right. not anything on an atomic or subatomic level. He's not referring to physical building blocks of the universe. And what I
correct.
What I think is interesting about involving time in this is what Wolfram is saying, if I'm understanding you correctly, is something that I haven't really heard before, at least not on a fundamental level, which is the laws of physics and the laws that govern the universe are going to change over time.
Well, certainly the prediction is, and it has been in physics for a long time, is that they wildly changed at the very first few seconds
right.
of the universe.
The Big Bang changed everything.
Right. And in those first few seconds, we maybe had a whole bunch of dimensions that we don't have now, and things sort of settled down to our, like, three-dimensional...
They call it a Spider-Verse in science.
Yeah. That's how the Spider-Verse happened, was the first few seconds
of the
universe.
They call it a Spider-Verse. You can walk up to any physicist and be like, hey, you know, I'm cool. I understand. Spider-Verse. And they'll get it.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, sweet. And they'll open that door that's always locked to everybody else.
Yeah, you can come in. You can see the real physics now.
I think when you talk about what this stuff is and how it's different from the way physics has been expressed before, is one of the things that struck me in reading this article is that he's saying, you know, physics has been expressed as we have this stuff called space, mm-hmm. which is this sort of backdrop for matter to be placed on it, particles, whatever. There's space and then there's stuff in space. Mm-hmm. What Wolfram is suggesting with these experiments is that that is not the case. That space and all the stuff in space are all an expression of the same thing.
Whoa.
But there isn't this backdrop upon which you place stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just all an expression of the same process.
It's so funny to me that we didn't think of it that way before, right? Because you think on a fundamental level, picture nothing. You can't picture nothing. There is no nothing, right? Even space right. is something. And so it's wild to me that, like, stuff in space and space have always been thought of as different when they must be on some level. If there's going to be a unified theory of everything, everything has to be the same at some level.
Right, but I think physics has always sort of assumed that there was space and then this Big Bang happened in space mm-hmm. and it created matter
Spider-verse.
And everything else.
Created what we call it. Yeah.
And then there was
please,
like this.
Jeff,
was like this
I understand
portly
physics.
Kind of,
you don't need to talk down to me. You can just call it a Spider-Verse.
Yeah, and there's like this like chubby Spider-Man mm-hmm. who is sort of like, you know, kind of at the end of his rope yeah. and then there was a pig Spider-Man at the beginning
sure.
of the universe.
There could be an infinite
a Peter Porker, if you
will.
There
could be an infinite number of Spider-Men existing at any time, and some of them could be going backwards in time, according to one article that somebody read two paragraphs of this week, and then everybody picked up and ran with.
Okay, well, let me talk about time travel, and the other thing that blew my mind
yeah,
about this article.
Yeah, because this is the thing.
Again,
it sounds like time is woven into this in a way that I haven't really heard in a lot of other theories.
Well, that's what's so fascinating is that he really steps through and talks in this long article. It talks about how it's consistent with special relativity. Mm-hmm. It's consistent with quantum mechanics, like all of the tests that you would have on this idea are not just consistent, but actually can grow out of the IDE. You could actually come to E equals MC squared by looking at some of these equations rather than having E equals MC squared as a test. Mm-hmm. Like most people have a theory in physics and then use E equals MC squared and special relativity as a test against it. And he says that these ideas actually grow out of them. And you go, oh my gosh, that's the only way this could be solved is with Einstein's theories, Einstein's right. equations, which is kind of, I think, bolsters the argument. But let me talk a little bit about the other thing that blew my mind, which is he talks about this thing called causal invariance,
okay,
which is a term that he has coined, but it is something that grows out of this system where there are these things that he says always happens where you can create a string and apply one of these equations to it, and it will permeate in all these wild different mind-blowing different variations and go off in all these crazy shapes and weird, if you graph the connections between mm-hmm. all these different things, wild graphs, all these things are very beautiful
to
behold.
Uncle Ben is always going to die.
But Uncle Ben is always
going to
die.
That's going to be the same.
And that is true. That is going to be the same.
But...
And that is exactly what he's saying, is that there's causal invariance. There are these points where everything converges. And so you have the situation where AB can be turned into all these different things on one leg of the flowchart. And AB can be turned into all these other things on another leg of the flowchart, but enough steps down, they converge back to the same string.
Yeah, so sometimes the world's in black and white, sometimes it's in an anime, sometimes it's everybody's a pig and not a person, but Uncle Ben always dies, and there was always going to be a Spider-Man.
Exactly. No, I mean, you're talking tongue-in-cheek, but that's exactly
what
he's saying.
I'm not talking tongue-in-cheek. This is a Spider-Verse, Jeff. What I find very interesting,
that there are these you can have history mm-hmm. because each of these steps down the flowchart is time, and the width of them is space. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these things happening across space that are different permutations along the history line, right? So you can have infinite variance, mm-hmm. but there are these convection points, these points where things completely come back together, and every path on history still has this thing happen. Uncle Ben still dies.
But on a real level, what is one of these? What does he think is one of these points? Just to bring it down, I know we're saying Uncle Ben is always going to die because that helps us bring wrap our heads around it. But what is something? What is one of these points of causal invariance? What's something that's always true?
Well, he's not relating that to any like point in history or observable human experience. He's talking on a pure conceptual
level.
But
is it a physical property that's always true? Is it a force that's always true? Like, is there a physical thing that he points
at? It's a state of the universe. The universe will hit these states where no matter what happens, no matter what permutation of history happens, history can play out in these wildly different ways across different trajectories of causality. Mm-hmm. Where, and by the way, that's one of the profound things about this theory, is that what the universe is just causality attached mm-hmm. to itself. Like, it is just relationships of causality.
So, but is he saying that there will be places or times in the universe where all of these different offshoots are occurring? Like, are these offshoots occurring in different places in the universe, or are these offshoots different universes? Because I think that's a descriptor that we're getting kind of muddy, and that's what I want to be clear on. Are we talking about different causal chains, we're only living on one of these causal chains, or are we talking about these causal chains are all happening in some place somewhere around us in time?
Well, you bring up part of this paper that for me was the most difficult to grok. Okay. And I may be getting it wrong, and I welcome any emails to wehaveconcernsshow@gmail.com.
Is it whether Peter's parents are spies? Because that always seemed weird to me.
I just don't know how I feel
it better where he was just a random kid who was put in a place at a time and had to rise to the occasion. You know what I mean?
He's not special. He's not. His dad isn't the one who invented the venom serum.
Wear the mask.
This is what I've been saying. There's a large section in here that I read many times, and I still can't quite wrap my brain around it, which is the idea that because the idea here is that we're trying to find a fundamental theory of the universe, of everything. And everything includes us as the observers, right? So by definition, we are flawed because we are part of the thing we are trying to observe. So we can only see a tiny slice of what the equation itself would be able to express. And because we are inside that tiny slice, our observations are skewed.
We're talking about the dual slit experiment, things like that. Just by watching it and the way in which we watch it, we change it or we observe it to be something different than what it is.
And we are completely incapable. I don't quite grok the ramifications of this or exactly how it's expressed, but he shows in the graph exactly like how it changes the graph based on our positioning inside it. And it's fascinating, but I kind of don't know how to answer your question because I kind of don't get part.
Do you think that if you ever got to hang out with like a Wolfram or somebody like a Hawking or something like that, do you think it would be dope, or do you think it would be frustrating and a little frustrating for you and like extremely boring for them and like maybe it shouldn't happen? Do you know what I mean?
I think both. I think it would be super dope. I think it would be very frustrating because I would feel like I can't keep up. And I think it'd be so boring for them unless they, you know, enjoy a good dad joke or quip, you know, and then maybe I could hold my own in some other way that
we're just going right back to the kid with the paper airplane. You know what I mean?
No, it's exactly what it would be.
I think this is fascinating. If not for anything, when you talk about like how we observe this, how we understand this, it's like obviously somebody like your friend from MIT is going to read this paper, or read this article and get a slightly different perspective out of it than you did. But one thing that I think is very fun and very, very cool from the perspective of somebody who makes stuff and who creates stuff and who likes to consume stuff, it's very fun to think about these ideas being similar to things that we have heard in like our favorite sci-fi fantasy stuff along the way. And it's fun to think about how similar this stuff is to, I don't know, when you're saying like, oh, well, there are certain things that are fixed. I'm like, yeah, of course. There's a locked point in time. Obviously, I know that from Doctor Who. But that's not real. You know what I mean? But it's cool.
I mean, there's a certain show that you haven't watched yet that basically is all about this stuff.
God, is it?
That I highly...
It's fucking devs. I know it's fucking devs.
It is devs.
I saw the promos for devs, and I was like, I can't get into this right now. Because I knew devs...
Because I know devs is
going to be about that, and that's just... I know it's going to be my shit at any other point in time, but right now, I can't deal with something like that. I've got one... Listen, can I tell you something? Shows about like time travel and parallel realities and things like that, and like, is there code that runs the universe? Can we change the code? That sort of shit. I can't watch that when we're at a real shitty point in time and I'm stuck in a real shitty point in time. Do you know what I mean?
I can't do it right now. I totally get it. But for me, as somebody who's much more a romantic and I don't believe I have the science background to really appreciate what's being expressed. There's a lot of equations.
Hard same.
But, yeah. I mean, all the equations in this, I just kind of skim over. I'm like, oh, he'll explain why he just put that equation in there. But where I go into this is exactly what you said, which is sort of the sci-fi mind, the imaginative mind. For me, this sparks so much imagination in the sense that, you know, I always thought, what if, you know, you talk about what is God? And I always thought, well, what if God is just the rules? You know, what if it's just the rules? And the idea that there are these very simple rules, which is why I started with our Sudoku puzzle, right? Because what happens in that beautiful Sudoku puzzle, as it seems like an impossible puzzle to solve, it is an almost completely blank slate of cells that need to be filled in with numbers.
He literally says in the beginning, there's no way a human can solve this. This is unsolvable by a human. Although, what's interesting, and like he gets into it.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best progression from not knowing to knowing. It's so beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. And he talks about how it's the universe singing. And I think find that to be complete. I totally understand why Jeff Engelstein sent me this based on that, because it really does feel like the universe singing to me. It is what the reason that he was able to solve the Sudoku puzzle based on so little information is because he knew the rules. He knew the constraints. He knew the
limiters.
And then
once it was solved.
And based on what was...
Once it was solved, he was able to look at it and be like, I bet we're going to see this and this. Yes, we do. I bet we're going to see this and this.
Yeah.
And then once he figured out the rules, he figured out how the puzzle was built.
Exactly. And there's these patterns that emerged that were blind to him inside the process, but he was able to just step through the rules. And that's basically what Wolfram is saying the universe is doing. The craziest thing about all of this is the one thing that he keeps saying is, we may not be able to prove that this is true, because the only way we may be able to prove it is true is to run the program in exactly the same number of steps the universe did.
Damn.
So it may be irreducible to the point where in order to test we may find the equation that explains the universe and not know it because you cannot test it.
I love that. I love that.
Isn't that wild?
Well, because you think about it. I mean, and once again, this is everything we're saying here is simplifying things and talking in metaphors and talking in analogies. But right. I do love the idea that like, hey man, there's a whole fucking ever expanding, as far as we know, infinite universe going on right now that's doing a billion de billion de billion de calculations per second, like at every, like in just a tiny amount of square space. You can't build a computer that's going to replicate that in a way where it's every...
Yeah, it has to be the universe. It has to be the size of the
Douglas
universe.
It's that Douglas Adams thing of like building deep thought, and deep thought has to run for 100 million years. You know, and I do love, like, I do love this. And there is a danger. We want to make sure that people like are, it's easy taking these ideas and these things that we're talking about, or even reading the paper and taking it and simplifying it is great because it turns it into a story and it turns it into a metaphor and it turns it into a pattern. And we love those things as human beings. And they are fun, creative, like they're fun, creative exercises, but we do want to make sure that we're letting you know. We're not saying the universe is a computer simulation. We're not saying the universe is a Spider-Verse.
No.
We're not saying any of that shit.
No.
But we are saying...
We're saying the universe is a series of cannonball runs.
We're saying
runs.
It's basically infinite cannonball runs that are run by multiple teams back and forth over different road conditions, starting in 1971 with a van called Moon Trash 2.
And they all lead to the same
which
point.
Is Sammy Davis Jr. flipping the map around...
causal
infinitely
invariance.
And will Dean Martin ever make it to the end? I don't know. He shouldn't be driving. He's drunk all the time. That's the universe.
Do you think is it cannonball runs or cannonballs run?
Cannonballs runzing is what I think it is. The
that
runners
does sound better.
The runners right. Cannonball is what they were called in Shakespearean times. This is absolutely...
No, you're right to have the disclaimer, and I also should say there have been, in the days since April 16th when this was published, there have been some scientists that are doubting the theories and kind of poking holes, and that's great. That's what he wants, peer review. It's cool that he's kind of welcoming people into the project and saying, hey, we want other people involved and test our stuff.
I also want to say that we're not, when I say that, we're not discouraging you from thinking that way. There are fun creative things that can come out of that. And if it sparks an idea in you or some sort of like fun idea and you're like, oh, that's kind of like this, or it's a story like this, do it. Make the story. Make that thing happen. Like, take inspiration from this on whatever level you want to take it from and do something with it. But just know that we're explaining it the best way that we can wrap our heads around it. We are neither
Which is very bad.
We spent the first half of this episode talking about the fucking cannonball run. Leave me alone. I'm not your dad. But this is really interesting, and I do want to read this paper now that you brought it up. This is really
Oh, dude, you're going to love it. It's so fascinating, man. I was up way late last night reading it, and then I read it again this morning because, like, I knew I missed stuff as I was tired. And it's just, I still can't quite grasp it, but it's so tantalizing and so exciting to me. It's such a cool thing in this time where everything seems so dark. I just feel like, wow, this expands my mind and makes me excited about all the possibilities of learning and being connected to the universe.
No, this is amazing. Awesome. This is definitely, I definitely need something like this. I think right now it's like, we're all dogs that are left home alone without enough toys out. You know what I mean right now?
It's
like, we just need something, you know, those little puzzles with the treats where the dog has to like figure out how to open a door, like that kind of shit. We just need that right now. And this is one of those things. And I'm glad that you brought it up. If you're somebody with a great physics mind or a math mind and you understand a little bit more about this, we would love to hear from you. You can get at us either on the Facebook group, on the Reddit, on the Discord, which once again, hey, patreon.com/wehaveconcerns, join that Discord.
Love that Discord. Such great people on that Discord.
The conversations we can have about physics and the cannonball run on that Discord. You won't believe it. And then of course, if you see a story like this that you'd love us to cover on the show, any of those three places are great ways to do it, but they can also email us, can't they, Jeff?
Yes, they certainly can. We have concerns show at gmail.com. The Facebook group is facebook.com/group/wehaveconcerns. The Reddit is wehaveconcerns.reddit.com. Get at us. We love this community. Chat us up. And again, tell me all the ways I got this story wrong.
Can't wait.